Hey guys, Jacob Wynn here. Welcome to another episode of Wide World of Punting. This is episode 9, where we talk about everything and anything in the world of punting. Got a big show tonight with two main interviews and the Wide World Bet of the Week at the end, of course. And my first guest really needs no introduction, especially considering most Tripod followers are footy fans. It's Jamie Soward. This is a guy who's played over 200 NRL games, played Origin, won the Dally M for the 5/8 position, won a grand final. And post-career, he's really into his American sports and also into podcasting. And I've got him on to talk NBA as the NBA season tipped off today. So we dive into a bunch of markets and future bets for the NBA. Then I've got Tristan for Behind Bookie Lines. And it's a really interesting show this week for anyone who's interested in kind of how bookies use information. It's one thing to set the lines, but as you know, there's constantly new information coming through, key players in or out, how do they price the uncertainty, and how can punters benefit from it? But first, let's go to my chat with Jamie, and I actually opened the interview talking about one of my all-time worst luck NRL bad beats, where I was stood to win 50K on an NRL multi, and Jamie was involved, and I wanted to see if he could remember that game. So, Jamie, you think you're here to talk about the NBA, which starts today, but you were actually involved in one of the most painful gambling losses in my entire life. It's been over nearly 10 years now. I just want to talk to someone about it, if that's okay. So I want you to cast your mind back, and I haven't prompted you at all. Round 20, 2011, it's Monday night, St. George Dragons in Canberra. And this was, as I said, Monday night, so it was the final game of the round. I had the greatest multi of my life riding. All I needed was your St. George Dragons to win the game. And I was in my early 20s. I'll admit it. I stood to win close to $50,000. Before I say anything more, do you remember the game I'm talking about?
I do, because I kicked for Mark Gasny a try just before half time.
Beautiful kick.
We'd actually stretched our lead, but I missed the goal kick. And I remember going into halftime thinking, you know, that could have really broken their backs because we didn't have a good record down there. But, yeah, we came out the second half and stunk it up.
Yeah, I was watching the highlights again this morning, and you guys go in near the post, and I'm like, oh, they were winning 20-6. And then the second half started, and it was 18-6. I said, what? But I'm not going to have a go at you for that. You had a lovely touch in a couple of the tries. And you did me a solid. You kicked a beautiful field goal with about 90 seconds left in the game after you guys let them, you know, back to tie it up at 18-all. You're winning with 12 points.
I kicked the field goal, and I just remember running back thinking we're home. And then they go short, and Dugan ends up scoring the try, I think, which beat us on the siren. We lost down there a couple of years in a row in that sort of last second. So, not great memories for you, but tough ones for me as well.
Yeah, sorry, not great memories for you. You know Dugan knocked on that winning try as well. If you look slowly. I don't want to blame a ref, and I'm certainly not blaming you for missing like a conversion or whatever. But why not send it to the video? You don't have to be the hero and blow a try. It's funny because at halftime I said to my mate, there's only one man who can stop me winning this bet now. It's Josh Dugan. He is a superb talent. He did have a couple of big tries in that game. So one other question then. And I should say, you guys were the defending champs. Meanwhile, the Raiders finished 15th that year. So is the hoodoo a real thing?
Yeah, it is. I don't know. We just hadn't had the year before. They finished pretty high up the ladder, and we just never had the wood over them, especially down there. We always found it a tough place to go down there and win. But when I went to Penrith, the first year we went down there, we won quite easily. So, yeah, it was weird how that stuff sort of worked.
That's my fault for betting against the hoodoo in that one. I learnt my lesson. I'm nearly over it, as you can tell. All right, look, the NBA has come around bloody fast. It feels like only a few weeks ago the Lakers were hosting Larry O'Brien in the bubble. But here we are. The season begins again today. You are a diehard NBA fan. You cover it on your podcast. In fact, I was honoured to be on your show last week, and I encourage people to listen to that because we actually dived a bit deeper. The whole show was a deep dive on this upcoming NBA season. But I've got you here to chat about some of the major topics with me again today. Can we start with MVP? Because I know you've got a pretty solid pick here on a team and a player that you think is going to go gangbusters this year.
Yeah, I think, look, with the NBA starting so quickly, guys like LeBron James, these older guys that played so deep, Anthony Davis, may take a little bit longer to get going. They may be rested in the opening month. of the NBA season. So my top three, I think Luka Doncic, who's the favourite pretty much everywhere. This guy is the all-round talent that he has. He scores, he rebounds, and he gets other players involved in his team. So that's what they'll be looking to do. And one thing when remembering when you do have a bet, firstly, do it responsibly. But secondly, the NBA and ESPN, they always go around storylines. And you spoke about this last week as well, that you know, the LeBron James storyline gets tiresome for some voters. Otherwise, he'd win it every year because he still is the best player. But you've got storylines within the game this year. Can Giannis get over the hump? And if his team finishes first again, the voters are probably tired of Giannis. Can KD come back and get the Brooklyn Nets into a one or two seed? Then that propels him into MVP voting. But Luka Doncic for me, Steph Curry and LeBron James will round out your top three, knowing that LeBron James will go into overdrive. And if he can win MVP in his 18th season, again, that will kickstart the storyline of LeBron James versus Michael Jordan. So you're not just thinking about who the best player is in your opinion. Keep an eye out for the storylines as they continue to evolve throughout the NBA season.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, because we're not saying Luka is the best player on the planet. Maybe one day he will be, the way he's ascending. But you look, as a rookie, he went 21-6-8. Last year, 29-9-9. So I don't think it's unrealistic that he averages a 30-point triple-double. It's his third year in the league, but sixth professional league, because he was carving up in EuroLeague before that. I just think he resonates with the young fans and old alike. Like, he's got the deep threes, the sick passes. It's all about that storyline, as you say. Universally loved guy. And that is important because it's a voted award. I did actually throw at you a long shot, and I haven't cooled off this yet. And he's a guy who plays for your team, and you've got Larry Legend behind you and a Celtics cap on, if that doesn't give it away. So Jason Tatum, 25-1. I just think for the upside, like, I'm not necessarily saying Celtics would be a one or a two seed in the East, but you look at his tangent, I suppose, 16 points per game a couple of years ago, 23 per game last year. They lose Gordon Hayward, Kemba Walker is a bit hurt. Could he average near 30 points a game and be in the MVP discussion?
I think he'll be in and around the MVP discussion. Whether they win enough games is going to be the big question for Tatum, whether he's up there in that voting or not. Because if they sit around that fourth or fifth seed, which I'm expecting the Celtics to do this year, based on their loss of depth, then that's going to be really hard for him to get votes against everyone else. And the East is sort of top heavy at the moment, whereas the West is 13 teams deep. So I think the voters, and especially the traditionalists, they seem to give more weight to the West at the moment, knowing that, yeah, Giannis has just been amazing the last 2 years, but his time's come and gone. His quest now is to win an NBA championship. So I think, you know, the only ones from the East would be KD. Potentially Tatum's a little bit of value there, but I don't know if the Celtics will win enough games and put him in a position to win it throughout the year.
Yeah, that's fair enough. If you look at historically, whoever's won MVP has almost always been a one or a two seed, apart from rare cases like Westbrook. They might have been a five, but he had such historical stats. Let's move to Defensive Player of the Year. So it's another obviously subjective voted award, and you've got a pick as well that Aussies should be happy with.
Yeah, definitely. I think last year Ben Simmons was in that discussion pretty much all year. And with Doc Rivers, if you think back to the 07-08 Celtics, they had the big three, but they built their season off the back of their defense. So one of the best defensive teams that year, and that allows your attack to flow. So I think with Ben Simmons this year, you see him get after steals. I actually like him to get most steals or up there with most steals with another guy, Murray from over there in Denver. So yeah, those guards that are in and around the top of the key, you know, picking up rebounds and steals and stuff like that, they're going to be hard to beat. But I think Ben Simmons can do it both ends this year. And if he gets his defense right, you may see him attack the ring a lot more. And I think that'll just give him more confidence. He's such a big body. I think he's around that 17 or even I think he might be shorter now since we spoke about it last week, Jacob. But the way that Doc Rivers coaches might be just the key to unlocking Ben Simmons, provided he doesn't get traded to the Houston Rockets.
You hit the nail on the head there, and we should give ourselves a pat on the back, because a few of these tips we spoke about last week, the odds have shortened come through to today, and that's why I shared out that pod that we did last week, because I had a feeling like these tips might not still be around at the same odds a week later. I'm not sure if we moved the market or not, but yeah, that would throw a spanner in the works if Ben Simmons ends up on the Rockets, and it is possible. The Rockets' former GM, Daryl Morey, is now the president at Philadelphia and may make a move for James Harden, and it would be Simmons that would go back. But I'm with you. If he stays in Philadelphia, I think they're going to be a top five defense. He led the league in steals last year. He also blocks shots. He guards the opponent's best players. So I really like that, and I like the long shot, and he's a fun player to cheer for. Let's move to Rookie of the Year. In interesting crop of rookies coming through. And this is an award. It's not about the wins, whereas with MVP, your team needs to have success. With the Rookie of the Year, it's much more individual stats. Is there a player or two that you like the look of for good value Rookie of the Year?
I think, again, back to the MVP discussion with the storyline, it's going to be hard to go past LaMelo Ball. He's already shortened. I think, Top Sport had him at about $5. Some other betting agencies at $4.50. He's into about $4 now. So he'll be hard because he'll get all the highlights. But one thing to remember is that, that'll only take him so far. If they're losing games by 15, 20 points, which they were the other day when he had those highlights, the voters will see through that, because last year you saw Ja Morant. They value winning in this league. So don't get swept up with all the ESPN hype if LaMelo Ball, Charlotte Hornets are losing. But he will be the favourite. I actually like a guy from Cleveland, Isaac Okoro. He came out, he had a pretty good preseason. But think about the guys that are going to get exposure on these teams and play minutes. LaMelo Ball, if he has one bad game, I don't know if they're going to stick with him as a starting point guard, but Isaac could play plenty of minutes. So you're looking for your rookies to come out. And at $21, I think he's very, very good value.
Yeah, it's a similar one where you're not trying to actually figure out who the best rookie is or who's going to have the best career. You're looking at who's going to get the best opportunities this season. I totally agree. And Okoro, in paying in the 20s as well, is a long shot on Cleveland. He will get his opportunities and stats there. What about most improved player? Again, this is a one where it's very hard to even figure out what the criteria of this award is. But we'll have a shot anyway, because there's some juicy odds floating around. Who have you got for most improved?
It was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's going to be the favourite. But again, this is such a hard award to pick. I think you're sort of throwing darts, especially that sort of six man, most improved sort of stuff doesn't really pick up until the end of the year when it all starts to be counted. So I actually like Zion Williamson. I thought last year the New Orleans Pelicans held him back a little bit. This year you're going to see him play a lot more minutes. They're going to be pushing for the playoffs. And if he's able to average a double-double and get his team into the playoffs, there may be just a little hidden storyline there that he misses out on the Rookie of the Year with Ja Morant, but comes back and has a massive season this year playing, potentially the 72 games. Maybe he plays 66 games and has a double-double with some assists as well. So I actually went Zion Williamson. I think you can get him maybe around the $23 to $21. But again, just looking for value. It's such a hard award to pick that one. And I think we both agree, you don't really know until the last sort of month or two of the season.
And he's a guy who his ceiling, this year, would be MVP discussion if he was fully healthy and going as well as he can. Stan Van Gundy goes in and coaches there. The only thing I would say is I don't think they should ever give most improved to a second-year player, because rookie can't win most improved. And, of course, a second-year player should improve a lot. So I think it has to be a really massive leap. But he's the kind of player with that upside that he could have it. And he's also such a fun player to cheer for. And we all hope that he has a massive year. Now, I asked you, if there's any teams, this could just more regular season based, that's sticking out for you to either that you're bullish on to have a really good year or that you think could struggle. Did you have a look at any of them?
Yeah, I think there's a couple. The I guess intriguing one in the East is the Atlanta Hawks. They've built their roster. They picked up Danilo Gallinari, Bogdanovic as well, plus Rajon Rondo. So they've got some experience there in with this young superstar in Trae Young. They've got Collins there as well. So this is a team that has been irrelevant for a while now since they were the number one seed with Al Horford and Paul Millsap. I'm expecting them to make a leap this year and push that win percentage that you're talking about. I actually expect them to go over quite easily because they can beat up on some of the teams in the East. Plus, they'll trouble some teams in the West on the back of back-to-backs and three and sort of four nights that they're trying to get in the season. So I actually like the Atlanta Hawks to get over their win target this year in the East. And out in the West, the big improver for me is going to be the Phoenix Suns. Trading for Chris Paul, being able to get a floor general for Devin Booker. You got DeAndre Ayton there, who you're expecting to make a bigger leap after a troubled sort of first couple of years in the league. I'm expecting him to come out and form what's going to be the nucleus of a sort of a big three there for the Phoenix Suns. And you think about how well they played in the bubble. You only have to add Chris Paul, who took an OKC team who was given no chance to make the playoffs into a fifth seed in the West. So I'm expecting a huge leap for the Atlanta Hawks in the East and the Phoenix Suns to get over their win target in the West just because they've got Chris Paul and Devin Booker's a superstar.
That's a good point. I think both those teams you've mentioned, they've signaled their intentions. They've spent money in free agency and they've traded because they want to win and they want to make the playoffs. They're sick of being irrelevant. So you've got teams that should be focused because they've got a goal. And that means something night to night. And the Suns, as you say, like they didn't lose a game in the bubble, but they were just a few behind getting into the play-in. And I'm totally with you with the Hawks. In fact, gave it out on your pod over 48.5% winning percentage because in case of COVID, they're preferring to grade it on a win percentage. In case we lose a few games, you can still ride your bet. And that's dropped like 15 cents on TopSport. But you know what? You can still bet them over 47.5% at $2 on Unibet. They're asleep at the wheel there. And I think all the guys you mentioned, plus Clint Capella, they traded for him last year, but he didn't actually play. So he's essentially a new addition as well. Are there any sides that you think the future is a little bit more bleak for this season?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about it last week, as you mentioned. Yeah, there's some teams that are going to have high win percentages. You know, the Brooklyn Nets, if they get off to a slow start, I mean, they've looked good in the preseason, but if they get off to a slow start, are they really going to push for a number one seed knowing that they've got two of the top sort of four players out in the East, or are they just going to, you know, cruise and be happy where they are? I think their win total is going to be interesting to watch. The other one that might be interesting to watch as well is a team like the Utah Jazz now. Haven't been able to get over the hump. You know, them and the Denver Nuggets have sort of played second fiddle in terms of exposure and relevance out in the West because of the two LA teams. But just keep an eye on them this year because the Denver Nuggets have been there or thereabouts the last couple of years, haven't been able to get the job done. Utah Jazz the same. I just don't know how long you can keep going to the well without sort of one of those teams slipping. So I think the Denver Nuggets, potentially the ceiling might be reached with that group. They're going to have to make some moves or they could just blow it out of the water and go for it all. But, yeah, keep an eye on those two teams in the West.
And that's a good point too, because you said the West is so stacked. Like, not everybody can win a lot of games and not everyone can go over their percentage. It's just going to be, you know, dogfights every night out there and so many teams that believe they should be in the playoffs. So they can't all have big win totals. I have an under a team that I just can't see winning many games at all, Detroit Pistons. And it's low. It's 23.5. And I just think they've got like Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose. I don't know what those guys have got left. And I think it could be a long year for teams that are not in contention. And then they become sellers. Like, is there a contender or pseudo contender that says, we'll take Blake Griffin, even D Rose, off your hands? And then, you know, that suddenly, to get over 23.5 wins, they've still got to win once every three nights. I don't necessarily know if they will.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Derrick Rose will be on the market usually before Christmas because the NBA season starts a lot earlier. But, you know, we're seeing January, D-Rose is going to be going to one of these contenders for sure. I wouldn't be surprised if you see him somewhere like maybe LA Clippers or out West, you know, with one of these teams just to try and help them push. Maybe someone like, you know, Phoenix go for him and try and have someone to back up Chris Paul. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Detroit Pistons. They're one of the worst franchises in the NBA at the moment.
Yeah, it's because the future isn't even bright. They haven't really, they haven't been low enough to get that star in the draft either. And I think somebody out there might talk themselves into Blake Griffin. Oh, we could bring him in and bring him back to his former self. So that's why I would bet under there. I think you've got that chance their personnel group could get even weaker. But back to the top, let's talk about the finals. Who have you got as your pick in the East and the West, and who takes it out?
The dream is the Celtics in the East. That's my heart speaking. And I'd love them to play the Lakers. I just think that, you know, they would match up better than what people think. The Lakers are very deep this year. I think the Lakers, you know, taking my Celtics hat off, I think the Lakers will come out of the West again. They've just recruited too well. You know, Montrezl Harrell, Dennis Schroeder, you talk about Wesley Matthews. Like, they've got so much depth now to the point where if LeBron James is healthy, you know, come finals time, they are going to be the team to beat. Out east, I think it's going to come down to two teams. It's going to be whether Giannis can either get the job done and get to an NBA finals and develop a jump shot and have someone support him. I wouldn't be surprised, Jacob, if they actually tried to move Chris Middleton throughout the year. probably try and get a little bit more help. I know he's on a massive contract, but you may be able to get two or three players and help Giannis, because just at the moment, I'm not sure that, you know, between him, Drew Holiday, and also Giannis, that's enough to get the job done if they are to come out of the East. The other team to watch, who I think every year is going to be hard to beat, is the Toronto Raptors. Every year they find a way to put themselves in position. Now, this is an actual team. The Miami Heat, whether they can do it again or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I love watching the Raptors play. Even though they're in the Celtics division, I love watching them play. But if I had to pick one team, I think it's going to be the Milwaukee Bucks, and they make a move with Middleton.
And that's the thing, because they gave up quite a lot to get Drew Holiday. So they don't really have a lot of other moving parts other than Middleton to improve the team. And if they start off slow, I mean, Giannis has signaled his intent to stay on this team. He signed the Supermax extension. They got to do right by him. They've got to produce a contender. They absolutely can make the finals. I'm going to go Brooklyn Nets in the East. And I think either way, if they've got the pieces as well to make a big trade, the Harden trade is kind of looming over this whole season, because he's going to go somewhere,
I think, out of Houston. They cannot do the Harden trade.
We disagree on this one. So talk to me about your concern. If the Nets get Harden, I pick them to win the title. But you've got concerns if he goes there, because there's only one basketball.
Yeah, and not only that, Kyrie's not a great defender. KD's coming back off an Achilles. You know, James Harden's one of the worst defenders in the competition, but a great scorer. He can't play off the ball. You know, this was when people were saying they wanted James Harden in Dallas, he wasn't going to play off the ball and let Luka run the team. So he can say all the right things. The actual perfect fit is actually Philadelphia, where they have a big man in Joel Embiid, and then they can get up and down the court, and they've got shooters, but they need a person that can control the ball, whether that happens or not. I don't think that would be the right move, you know, for Ben Simmons, obviously. But in Brooklyn, you got two guys over there that want the ball, and it could go south very quickly if they don't gel and you pull all these triggers. Because what happens when you get a depth player on your team is you become a really good team. And we saw with the Golden State Warriors, they made five finals in a row, but they gradually lost their depth as they continued to be successful, because people wanted more money and they had to get more superstars. So if you get another superstar in Brooklyn, you only have three superstars, you're going to have to give up a shitload to get rid of him. Yeah, do you lose Dinwiddie? Do you lose these guys that have been, you know, the crux of what they've been doing good in Brooklyn to get you there? Because they can't play 48 minutes every night, those three guys. So I'd just be wary of that. If Brooklyn, if they lose their depth, they might not be able to get the job done.
That would be the big debate. You sacrifice your depth and you're all in on your three stars, and then you're trying to fill in pieces with guys that would come in on veteran max and rookies. But you're right, they would lose Dinwiddie, they'd lose Caris LeVert, and they'd probably have to give up a king's ransom of picks. But at the end of the day, KD and Kyrie are only on two-year deals. So I just see Brooklyn, it's an all-in, win-now situation. Steve Nash, it's a very high bar that he's got to clear. He's coming in as a first-year coach. Pretty much expectation is championship or bust. And there's absolutely implosion potential as well because of the personalities of those guys. But I still see the ceiling. And I think they get Harden, you're right, they'd be pretty woeful defensively, but they could beat teams 150 to 145 with that three. And if they don't get Harden, I actually think with the depth, and I've seen KD look all right in the preseason with his movement, 18 months off the Achilles, that is still my pick to make the finals. What about, you've gone Lakers. I'll throw a bonus question at you, right? The Lakers are the favorites to win the title this year. If they do, that's LeBron's fifth ring. I mean, if he gets to seven, is he the GOAT?
It's hard. You know, I'm a traditionalist. I think that, you know, the six finals, six NBA MVPs, rings, yeah, that for me still will hold a lot of weight. LeBron James has had to move around and done it on different teams. I think he's the greatest athlete we've seen in the NBA and the greatest marketer and one of the greatest leaders. I don't know if he's the greatest player. This is right now we're looking at, and you could say the same when Michael Jordan was running around. There's some guys there that, with all due respect to them, they work hard to get to the NBA that probably wouldn't have played, been able to play in MJ's era and vice versa. But I think the talent of great players was a lot deeper when MJ was running around, which is why it took him so long And plus, he did it, yeah, two three-peats. That's hard to do. That's getting up season after season. LeBron James made 8 NBA finals in a row, or you know, 9 out of the last 10. So for me, I think I'd be the traditionalist and stay with Michael Jordan. But LeBron, like 1A, yeah, 1A, I don't think you can split them too much.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to compare players of eras. I mean, maybe LeBron is almost similar to a Cam Smith because it's sustained greatness. This is what LeBron's like 18th or 19th season. Like, you didn't get that from Jordan. Like, that's sustained longevity in the way, the shape that he's in, the way he looks after himself. Like, it isn't, doesn't, not showing any signs of slowing down just yet either. As we saw, he won the finals MVP. For the record, I'm going to go Clippers in the West, though. Bit better value at $4. And I think Paul George is healthier this year. He signed his max deal. We know what Kawhi can do as well. And I still think it's a scary defensive team. And a lot of stuff went wrong for them. And they did kind of implode in the bubble. But Tyronn Lue comes in there. He's won a championship before as a head coach. So I'm going Clippers. So it's really hard, but I'll probably have to say Nets over Clippers in the finals, and you're saying Lakers over Bucks, or man, Giannis, LeBron finals
Celtics.
Would be unreal.
I'm saying yeah, look, as much as it pains me, I think that it's, if LA's fit and firing and LeBron's good, that they'll go to 18 championships, one ahead of my Celtics.
Well, for what it's worth, they claim about 5 of those when they were in Minnesota. So you can kind of say they've only won 13.
It's just an empty argument. I bring that up with people all the time, and they say, well, you won 11 in a row, yeah, back when there wasn't 30-odd teams. I don't know. I just, yeah. We've only won one in the last 20 years, so I'm hoping that we get back there soon.
And it is a great rivalry and a famous rivalry. And you never know, like the Celtics, they are a very well-coached team. They might still have a move to make, and they've got young players that could get better. So that's why we love the NBA. We love to see what happens, because you never know. I'm actually going to get you back on the show a couple times throughout the season. We can check in. But can you let people know where else they can follow you and your content?
Yeah, at Sweet and Soured. We do it on Instagram. We're having a little bit of a break now. We do pretty much... very similar to what you're doing with the tripod. We do NRL, NBA, a little bit of everything. But moving the chains, if you're into your NFL, Chad Townsend, Trent Copeland, Nick Davis and myself host the Moving the Chains podcast, coming into finals or playoffs soon. So we've been able to do this now for over 30 weeks. So, yeah, just keep an eye out for Moving the Chains or the Sweet and Sour podcast.
How good is the US sport that it just fills our void? As soon as our footy season ends, we get NBA and NFL. It's so good. I really appreciate your time jumping in here and sharing your thoughts and value on the NBA season. And we'll talk again soon. Cheers, Jamie.
No worries. Talk to you soon.
So that was Jamie Soured talking NBA. Now we switch to the increasingly popular Behind Bookie Lines. And as I said at the start of the show, this is a really good segment this week. We're talking all about player information, and it could not never really been more relevant. We've seen so many examples across a range of sports, and in this chat we talk rugby league, cricket, AFL, NBA, NFL, and how the bookies get their information, how they use it to factor into their markets, and what punters can look for to find an advantage. And this chat actually begins with a specific example that came about in our group about 2 or 3 weeks ago, where the news broke that the Philadelphia Eagles were benching their starting quarterback. So we'll start there with Tristan from TopSport.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of player movement, is that everyone's got a different opinion, and that's why there is an edge in those sort of situations for the punters, because if you can get on that information earlier before the markets move, then obviously you take advantage of that. You can also, you know, at the end of the day, then it's just a bookmaker or the market's opinion on how much a player or a situation's worth. So sometimes, you know, you can get into a position where the market overreacts to a player or to a situation. So in that one that you were referring to there with the Philadelphia quarterback situation, I think there's two key things to look at. If you got an injury or an unexpected type of thing, then in my opinion, the market generally moves a lot harder, particularly if you've priced in a situation where you think player A is going to play and he's a significantly better player than his potential replacement. That's when the market will move quite instantly and quite quickly, or as soon as that information is known. So if you can sort of understand that and you can get onto that information before it breaks, then you're definitely going to find yourself in a positive position. With the situation regarding the quarterback switch, that to me was never going to move as far as a lot of people thought, because it was a form-based decision. It was based on a decision of, you know, Carson Wentz had been pretty ordinary the last little bit. obviously he's got the name, he's been there for a while, but it wasn't as though, it's not as though the coaches are picking a team to make it worse. They were picking the team to make it better. So whilst, you know, you're bringing in a somewhat unknown player and these sort of things, it was the market in any, if anything, it was to make the team better. So it's not going to shift off the map. If a player gets dropped for disciplinary reasons or those sort of things or an injury, then obviously, yeah, it's a change being made for a team that is going to be worse off on the back of that. But when it's a form-based thing, I think that's a completely different situation. So for the punters out there, when they're trying to assess what the market's going to do, you have to look at it and you basically have to sort of almost allocate, you know, points or lines to particular players in the side. And you can't just allocate, you know, a Carson Wentz figure out of 10 when he's at his best. You know, if his form's not up to scratch, then he can't be at the same rating as what he was when he was a Super Bowl, you know, quality quarterback. So I guess that's the things to look at from a punter's point of view. It happens in every sport and you've just got to be aware of it and try to understand it. And again, it's just an opinion. And that's where punters, you know, there is that variance there because we need to sort of see a number of bets flying before we can get that mark to a really efficient point.
And that's why I think this topic is so relevant because it affects every sport. And obviously, quarterback, I would argue, is the most important position in any team sport for how valuable one player is relative to their whole team. The NBA starts tomorrow, and that's a sport where only 5 players take the court and superstar players, you know, have a monumental effect on what the odds should be, what the line should be. What you also touched on there are multitude of reasons why a player might not play. Like in the NBA, it's very common now where you just get resting. They play, you know, usually 82 this season, 72 games, condensed schedule. So, you know, with little warning, a player may be rested. We've obviously got unique scenario with COVID, as we've seen in the NFL, with players just unavailable all of a sudden. There's trades where a player becomes unavailable. You've got your regular injuries where you've got to adjust, but your minor ones where your status is uncertain. So can you talk a bit more about how you deal with uncertainty? For example, a key player is considered a 50-50. Do you price that in, I guess, like the 50% of their value into their team's overall odds?
Yeah, for sure. If they and that's the other thing I understand. There's, apart from all those reasons, there's one that comes completely from left field where the markets move a lot harder. But in terms of one where there is, you know, doubt over a player, if there is a questionable status over someone that's in the team, you will sort of factor in that, yeah, you'll have to 50-50 price or 75-25, whatever you feel the likelihood of that player is, you factor that into the market. So you definitely take that into account and you monitor, and from our point of view, it's not just the pricing. We obviously then change our limits based on if there's uncertainty. Like we wouldn't bet as big a limits early on a game where there's a lot of doubt over particular players as if there was no doubt over a player. So that's the other way we counter it. So in that instance, you just have to be mindful of if you are shopping into those games, you need to be aware that like all the bookies are probably in that same boat. So you need to be able to spread your business a bit in those instances if you want to have sizable bets on those games early.
And talking about key players being worth a certain number of points, can you elaborate on that as well? So I mentioned an NFL quarterback, if he's out. Now, I think it's important to also talk about value over replacement rather than just purely a player's value. If a player is out, but his backup is extremely good, it doesn't downgrade the team that much. Whereas an average quarterback might be out for a team, they got a horrid backup, and it could actually be a larger adjustment. NBA, similar story, and even NRL, AFL with the key players. Do you have that in-house or like estimates at least of what key players are worth?
Yeah, we do, particularly for the AFL and the NRL, where we run everything manually. We basically feel we drive a lot of the market in those sort of sports. We do allocate numbers to key players, and we basically say if player X is out and he's been replaced by, because the good thing about the rugby league this year is that you have the squads where you know that if a player is out, you know which player is going to come in to replace him. So I think that's great from our point of view. It's great from the punter's point of view as well, in a sense that you can sort of get a bit of a feel for if someone is unlikely to play and who's going to replace them. So, yeah, if you've got a – and it can work the other way, where you might name Sean Johnson for the Sharks in number 21, and he's not named in the squad, but he's in that reserves lineup, so that you know that he's some chance of playing. And then if the two players drop away and he's still in there, you say, well, maybe he's a 70% chance of playing now. So you need to factor that in. And who's he going to replace? Is he going to – replace, you know, someone that's new, up and coming, or these sort of things? And you allocate a number to the player coming in, a number to the player coming out, and you get the net result. So if you might allocate, you know, 2 or 3 points to player X, and you allocate, you know, zero to the player they're replacing, then it'll be a 3-point swing in the line. If they're both 2 or 3 point ratings, then there's not a huge swing because they're like for like, those sort of things. The other thing that's really key to understand, it's not just the win, the line that moves. There's so many other factors. Like with today, James Conner came out for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And basically what you've got to understand then is who's the backup coming in. So we were laying the reserve running back to score a touchdown. You know, these are all
Benny
the markets.
Snell, yep.
Yeah, these are all the markets that you need to adjust when there's a player out, because it can affect the totals. If there's a good running back coming out, it can mean maybe they're going to throw the ball a bit more. If a good wide receiver comes out, maybe they're going to run the ball a bit more, which will obviously change the way the game is going to be played, same as rugby league. You know, in a rugby league game, if a winger, they can be the real trouble ones from our point of view. If a winger comes out, it might not change the actual line for a particular game, but it'll cause a player to come in, a centre might come in, they might shift the centre to the wing or the fullback to the wing and these sort of things. And then obviously all your try scorer models are all dependent on the position they play and all these sort of things. So what you have to understand is what you're looking for when a player comes out of a team and how that can affect the way the game's going to be played. A real good one to look at was on Saturday morning, Aaron Finch got rested for the Renegades. So he was priced into our markets. And obviously when he came out, there was a lot of uncertainty about him because he's had a big summer. But when he comes out, obviously that gives Hobart a much greater chance of winning. But not only that, it makes Melbourne's opening partnership a lot weaker. He hits a lot of fours and lots of sixes and these sort of things. So you just have to understand how that affects not only the outcome of the game, but how it's going to change the way the game's played. And they're the real key points that I think the bookmakers and the market aren't as quick to move on. You know, everyone's looking at trying to understand how much it's going to affect the probability of the team winning. But if you can go straight to, okay, Finch is out, there's going to be less fours for the Renegades. It gives Hobart a better chance of these things. Things that aren't the obvious things that you're trying to fix immediately. So that's the advice I'd give to punters, to be looking at those sort of niche markets and those situations and try to actually understand what's going to change in the way the game's played.
I think absolutely that's an opportunity for punters. So especially you look at a sport like NFL where you've got offensive and defensive players. Now, if a key defensive player is out, it hurts his team, but it also directly hurts the total, or means the total points should probably be a little bit higher because you've got one less, you know, stud defensive player. And as you said, like certain, it's not just about how good a player is means whether they're going to score. That's very dependent on what position they play. You talked about any starting running back in the NFL is going to have an opportunity to score a touchdown, basically. Any winger in the NRL. And it's not just players being out. It's also even positional switches. If news comes through that a team is going to swap whatever, as you said, like a center to a winger, or a center gets injured. I think this happened in when Parramatta played the elimination final against the Storm and Michael Jennings was stood down day of the game. Well, they had to shuffle their whole back line. Suddenly a player, just by virtue of moving to the wing, becomes much more likely to score. And as you say, you've got first try, you've probably got last try, you've got any time. So it all can be affected. And a punter, if they can pinpoint these opportunities, they may get some good value before the odds move. And another point, I'll just touch on what you said. If you think that Sean Johnson was worth 3 points over a replacement in the halves for the Sharks, and he was in the extended reserves list, and you thought he was like a 2 in 3 chance of playing, like 66%, you might upgrade the Sharks 2 points based on a 66% probability he plays. And if he does, they're upgraded by 3. So then a punter might think, I'm certain he's going to play, I'll bet the Sharks now, and I'm gaining a point of value because it's priced in the uncertainty. Or the other way around, there's talk he's playing, I'm hearing he'll be on ice one more week, so Cronulla is overpriced in the marketplace.
Oh, for sure. Exactly. And then the other thing you've got to be mindful of as a punter is if the game's on at 5:30 in the evening, and if at 3 o'clock the official news comes out on Twitter or wherever the news breaks that Sean Johnson is definitely playing, he's been given the official AOK. But then at 4:30, when the official team lists are announced, it says Sean Johnson in and such a player out. Punters then, if they haven't been following that news feed for the day, they can then overreact because they say, oh, the line's 8.5, Johnson's in, that's got to move it to 10. But in actual fact, the market's already moved from the 5.5 to 8.5. So it's very important when you see that news to be monitoring things on the way through. You can't just see one bit of news on game day and say, oh, it's definitely going to move the market, because if that move's already happened, then you're actually taking a bad option because you're betting into something that has already moved and actually gives good value the other side. Because if the market was set at 8.5, for example, and we've moved on the back of Johnson coming in, and then all this weight of money from people thinking it's breaking news and it moves to 10, you can get good value about the other side at 10 because it's moved way past what we deem the player to be. But again, obviously, it all then comes down to opinion. People might say, well, I value him at 6 points coming into the side. And that's the beauty about this variance, as you say. Like, everyone's got a different opinion on it. And you know, you never know if you're right until after the fact. And even then, there's still a lot of betting variance that comes into it at that point too.
And that's where I think monitoring the markets is an advantage, because if I'm always monitoring and I roughly know what the lines are at for the games, then when the news breaks or if I see a line move, I'm instantly thinking, well, some news must have broken today. Like, and often you know which players were questionable and you know the cause of moves. But if you weren't checking the line, as you say, oh, you've heard Johnson's in, you look at the line, okay, I'm going to bet it. It may have already been corrected. But I will say there's definitely plenty of market inefficiencies out there. And I want to talk to you about round 20 this year in the NRL, because I thought it was a great example. We profited from it greatly. First of all, we had the awareness that the Melbourne Storm were locked in to second position on the ladder, couldn't drop and couldn't improve. So there was negligible what they had to gain from their round 20 match against the Dragons. On top of that, that's speculation. But on top of that, Craig Bellamy literally announced in an interview in the radio on Tuesday morning before team list, he was going to give about 10 players a rest in round 20. Now, he didn't say which players. So again, it's hard to exactly know what that's worth. But you had to know, like, as a punter, I knew Storm's resting 10 players. You know, I can pretty much guess which key players that will involve, and I know that's a wholesale change. The Dragons were still plus 16.5 point underdogs at 9 a.m. that morning. Mm. By the time the teams were named, the Dragons were a short favourite. Do you recall that that teamless Tuesday before round 20?
Yeah, the last week of the season's are never a lot of fun to trade because you do get a lot of movement. So we were sort of aware that there was going to be mass changes of that Storm. We heard the same information. We get a lot of our information off Twitter, and there was a lot of that news going around. So we obviously priced that game up, you know, initially on the Monday without, you know, probably erring on the side. Like we probably made a blue there because, as you say, it was always likely the Storm were a good chance of resting a lot of players. So we went up with the market at there, which was too high. We did try to stay below the market the whole way down. In hindsight, we probably should have moved harder, but we did get hit quite significantly on the way through on the Tuesday and the lead up to teams. Now, the issue with the marketplace at the moment, particularly on rugby league, is there's no minimum bet limits like you've got for the rugby league. So unfortunately, a lot of the pro punters out there, which normally cause the markets to shift, they can't get set on a Tuesday. So I guess a lot of those punters were, you know, probably keeping their powder dry, hoping the line wouldn't move, or they hadn't even chimed into the market because they can't get set. So that's the point when the market isn't really efficient, because a lot of the other bookmakers who've got the line out there, people can't get set to the level they want to. So you can snipe at these lines, and then if the rest of the market, you know, we couldn't go up at 4.5 when the rest of the market 16.5, you can't, because there's just too big a middle. So we were trying to stay a couple of points below the market the whole time. If the line was 14.5, we'd be 12.5, we'd be shifting down. But you know, if you know there's 10 players going to come out, in hindsight, we should have moved harder. But you know, it's just one of those things. It's dangerous that last week of the season, and we consciously make a habit of not trying to bet too big too early, because you know anything can happen.
You make a good point about the limits being lower, and therefore that causes market inefficiency, because the people who are, I guess, in the know and making very educated bets can't get their limit size bets. But it's still worth pointing out, anybody can throw a good multi or handful of multis on a Tuesday, and the Dragons were $6 or $7 head-to-head, you know, like, and that can still build up your liability, people who are betting on that information.
Oh, exactly. And our liability was significant.
Can you give some examples of where you get your information? Because it's an arms race almost. So who can get their information quicker? There's so many avenues with social media. Obviously, I think you referred to Twitter before, and there can be people refreshing a Twitter feed, especially if they know a specific player who may or may not play, you know, so they know what they're looking for. And then, of course, there's just the totally out of the blue ones that we mentioned as well. You need to, I guess, somehow stay ahead of the punters, or else you're going to be very vulnerable of having your markets bet based on breaking news. So can you give us a bit of an insight into how you attempt to do that?
Yeah, we use Twitter a heap. Oh, it's such a valuable tool for all things news. It's so quick. We follow, you know, journalists. We follow the people that traditionally have broken the news first. So whenever there is a key movement in the team, we generally go back and have a look at who broke that news first, so that we can then follow those people. So it gives us an idea. We obviously use punters as a bit of a tip off as well. If there's particular punters that are beating us to the price all the time, obviously you know, you may not know exactly what player's out at the time, but you obviously move on the back of their business and you say, well, I'm going to, you know, err on the side of caution here and get out of the row. But Twitter is definitely a key one. It's about doing your research. And as you say, like if you can, before that even any news is broken, if you know that there's a lot of uncertainty over a particular game, we just make sure we have notes written all over the match so that we know if there's good money coming from a particular team, or the totals is another key one. If there's weather around, you know, if we start laying these bets, even though nothing is broken, we need to make sure that there is a lot of uncertainty surrounding a game. So we would move harder on a bet in a game where there is a lot of uncertainty, as opposed to one where, you know, there doesn't appear to be. And that can sometimes get you into trouble as well, because if there is that one that comes from left field where you aren't, you know, expecting anything, you can sometimes overcommit on a side and find yourself in a position that you can't get out of. And then you're in a position where you've got a pretty ugly book come jump time.
So what I'm hearing from that is that if punters are on the ball, they've got an equal opportunity that you do to see the information and hit it. And as I said, NBA tips off tomorrow. So let's say Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to be rested for the Bucks, and it's just out of the blue on Twitter. I presume in a case like that, you're going to suspend that market as quick as you can, rather than have a team meeting about what Giannis is worth to the line, because every second that can be being hit pretty much. But it still is something, if someone does act really swiftly, they could get in and get some mega value.
Oh, for sure. Like if there is a really key movement like that, we will suspend the game. But then when you come, then the key thing from a punter's point of view is, you know, the information's out there now. Are the bookmakers going to move it too hard? Are they going to not move it hard enough? Because again, that's where it comes down to that opinion. So you can still get value. And as I said, most times you'll try to get that win or that head-to-head right. But then when you see that market suspended and you know it's out, you know, okay, it's in all likelihood, the bookmakers are going to get this roundabout is value, and it's going to be a roundabout, right? But then you say, okay, whilst the market's resetting, what moves does this player movement affect in other areas? And sit down at night on a Wednesday night, make a list of the games. These are what the lines are. This is what I feel the line should be. And then if you see a key player that as you say, you either want to bet it more or you want to back the other side less, just make sure you're now betting into a line where you feel you've got an edge.
Yeah, some good points there too, because some of the big-name players that would move the odds the most sometimes can be overrated as well. People think they're too good just because they're the more famous high-profile. So your opinion may just be this guy's overrated. When he gets announced out, you've instantly got an opportunity where his team is going to be over-downgraded, and then you can come in and get value on that team. And the other point you made there is about opening up opportunities for teammates. So Giannis averages like 30 points a game. If he's out, it does not downgrade the Milwaukee Bucks by 30 points. Other players are going to take, you know, their share. Of course, they probably may not all add up to 30, because you are going to downgrade what you expect the Bucks to produce on that night. But certainly, as you say, who's the second, third highest scorers and rebounders on that team? Suddenly, you know, they might be in line for a greater share of the stats as well.
Yeah, and for sure. And then one other thing I want to bring up as well, talking about the NRL for a sec with the Melbourne and the Dragons and then the Sharks and the Raiders. The other thing you've got to be mindful of is, what do these changes do to the players that are coming in? You know, in those situations where obviously you'd much rather be on the Storm when they got their top 10 players in, but at that 14, when the line moves, are these players coming in, they're fighting for their spot to try to get in those last couple of spots in a finals like that. If you've got players that are just going through the motions, they don't want to get injured because they got a big game next week, maybe that movement isn't as key as well. So you've got those opportunities that the market's going to see it one way. The market's going to go heavy the Dragons' way. The market's going to go heavy the Sharks' way. And it's just then trying to make sure that you don't just bet it blindly. You have to say, well, in this situation, actually, I feel that there's three spots up for grabs on this roster to make the finals. Maybe these young kids coming in are going to, they're now significantly overvalued. I'm going to flip the other side and go the other way once the markets move. You know, you have to time your betting at that point, because you need to make sure you get the peak price, and you need to make sure that you've waited until the lines move sufficiently far that you can either get a good middle if you got on early, or you can play the value the other side.
That's right. The Dragons were in extraordinary value on that Tuesday morning when the news was out, but the line hadn't moved. Now, once that line had moved 18 points from plus 16.5 to minus 1.5, you can't say I'm betting the Dragons because the Storm have 10 players out, because that's already been factored in. And the fact that the Storm are far better coached and hungry and had hungry youngsters in, whereas the Dragons were maybe, you know, thinking about a trip to Bali, that's why it was a fair odds. And then I think the Storm came out and scored about the first four tries in that game as well, and had me a bit nervous having tipped the Dragons and being confident. The Dragons did roll over the top of them second half in the end, and we got the right result. But that goes back to, I think, the point you made a week or two ago. It's like, all you're ever doing with your bets is trying to put yourself in a profitable position. It's never guaranteeing anything. It's all about just playing the numbers, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's about saying, if I bet this bet 100 times, am I going to be in front betting that exact same bet over 100 period? I might not win every bet, and you can't move away from your strategy. You just got to say, okay, if that exact scenario happened again, would I do the exact same thing? And if you would do the same thing, even if your bet lost, then you shouldn't change your mindset. And that's the real key thing. After, you have to really analyze your bets after you place it. And you have to say, okay, in hindsight, I would do the exact same thing again, win, lose, or draw. And that's the best sort of mindset to be in. And you need to grade yourself. You need to make sure you look at your betting and say, well, you know, that probably in hindsight wasn't a great bet because of these reasons. And then, but you don't want to do that in the heat of battle either. You want to leave that until the next day when maybe your emotions aren't flying around if you have had a losing bet on something that you did perceive as great value too.
That is always a hard one because, you know, typical punter mentality. When I win, I was right. And when I lose, I was unlucky. But you do have to be honest with yourself. I think this was a really insightful segment again this week. So thanks very much for kind of sharing your side of things in terms of how you get your information. I think a lot of people wouldn't have realized you get it the same way we all do, and how you move your markets accordingly. So thanks again for this edition of Behind Bookie Lines, Tristan.
No worries. Thanks, Jacob. Have a good Christmas to all the listeners out there as well.
Thanks again to Tristan, and I appreciate that. I've got a lot of great feedback on the Behind Bookie Lines segment, that you guys are really enjoying the insights that we get each week. Time for Wide World Bet of the Week. Of course, I got to face the music when it doesn't win, and that was the case last week with my creative Sunday NFL bet, which involved both of the games in the doubleheader. We needed Carolina to lose. They did lose. They were down as much as, I think, 21 in the game, so that wasn't an issue, but they had to score more than Denver. Now, Denver ends up with 19 points, barely had the ball in the first half, scores two touchdowns, and gets a late touchdown when they're down about 30. 19 was still pretty like a comfortable amount of points that we could have got over with the Panthers. They fumble the ball a foot out from the goal line. So there's 7 points wiped off the board. They end up with 16. They also elected to kick a late field goal, which was worth 3, instead of even giving themselves the opportunity to put up 7, which would have got them over the 19. So I felt like I come up with a good bet there. But as I always say, that's only half the battle. We still need it to win on the field. And here is one that, while I still think the odds are juicy, I believe this will win on the field. I think I'm come up with one this week that's better than 50-50. So hear me out. We've got the Boxing Day test going back to the well once again with cricket. I've had a one win and one loss on my Wide World Bet of the Week that have involved cricket. And of course, NBA. Now, NBA, traditionally, we have the big Christmas Day matchups in the States, and Christmas Day in the US is Sunday, Boxing Day, which is Saturday in Australia. So I'm going to combine one of the NBA games with the Boxing Day test. I'm going to go against a couple of recent trends. Now, that was in the first test, Australia beat India. As we know, it was a very low-scoring test match. The highest individual score across the four innings, 74 runs. And that was by Kohli, who's not even playing in this one. So nobody even, you know, turned up. We look at the NBA, and we've got the Brooklyn Nets, who I said in my chat with Jamie Soward is my pick to win the championship this year. And they actually played today. Their game just finished a few minutes ago when I'm recording this, and they scored 125 points. But on Christmas Day, they play the Celtics. Now, the Celtics are no joke defensively. I think top 5 in the league last year. Defensively, they're missing an important attacking point guard, if anything, that makes them more stout. They've added a defensive center as well. And there's a bit of feeling in this one with Kyrie Irving, who used to play for the Celtics, and the fact that this game is in the Boston Garden. So I think that the Nets, which, I know that their ceiling is almost limitless, they should generally, even though they went off today, start a bit slower in this NBA season. And I don't necessarily think they're going to score a heap of points in this game. Not sure if they'll win. I'd probably lean to the Celtics. But I'm going to play the Brooklyn team total to be less than the highest individual score in the Boxing Day test match. So I'm figuring that at least somebody in the test should get 120 plus. And I feel pretty comfortable that the Brooklyn Nets are going to be in the range of 110 or hopefully even under. That game's at about 8 or 9 a.m. Boxing Day. We're going to watch that. We're going to hope that the Nets don't score a ton. We're certainly going to hope we don't get like a double overtime and 140 odd points out of them. And then we're going to watch the test match for the next few days. And we just cheer for some good battings and just cheer for at least one player to come up with a great knock. And if we get that, as I said, I believe it's better than 50-50. but we're getting nice juicy odds of $2.25 for this one. So we're reaching a little bit lower, but there's an extra sweetener. Tristan's doubled the max stake as well. So we can have up to $200 on that. So we can have up to 200. Don't raise your stake if that's not, you know, your normal comfortable betting size. But for those who like to bet a little bit bigger, you can bet up to 200 to win 250 at the $2.25 odds. Now, one other thing I've got to let you know, guys, Top Sport aren't taking bets on Christmas Day itself. So if you like this bet, jump on by Christmas Eve or first thing in the morning before the NBA game tips off on Boxing Day. That'll do it for another week. So Merry Christmas, guys. I'm toying with the idea of maybe the NFL pod actually coming out Christmas night rather than Saturday morning, because there also is an NFL game on Saturday. So possibly look out for that. I'll let you know. But I genuinely hope that everyone has a great Christmas, celebrates this time with their family after a really difficult year. And I'm still going to be back. I'm not taking any breaks. I know some of you guys have more free time, so I want to give you the best content I can over this period of time. So I'll be back next week. I'm still committed to, I think it is another 7 straight more episodes of this, getting us into mid-February before we start looking forward to NRL, as well as NFL weekly, short weekly pods. Got back on the track with 60% winners in the NFL last week. So as always, gamble responsibly, guys. Legal.